Hello and welcome to The Real World, a podcast brought to you by Davitt Jones Bold, the leading real estate law specialists. I'm thrilled to have with us again Alan Carter, Chief Executive, and Joe Heath, Head of Environment and Biodiversity at the Land Trust. The Land Trust is a charitable organisation committed to the sustainable management of open spaces for community benefit. And in this episode, we'll be delving into the pressing topic of biodiversity net gain, particularly exploring off-site BNG land conservation covenants and the roles of responsible bodies.
You mentioned a really important element of the BNG regulations just now, which is that the habitat enhancements have to be maintained for at least 30 years, which is a long time. What are the challenges likely to be for developers given this 30-year period, and what solutions could be made available?
Yeah, so 30 years to the Land Trust isn't very long. Alan and I, we mentioned we're an in perpetuity land management body. We take on freehold, take on 999-year leases, 80-year obligations. So for us, 30 years is quite short term, but definitely for developers, it's or for new people coming to the game who are managing habitats, it is quite a long time. For farmers, it could cost a generation, for example. So it is a long time. Inflation over 30 years could be a massive impact on what how you fund and manage sites. So for us, it's not long term, but there definitely are still challenges with it in terms of how can developers deliver it. I've mentioned before the split. There's on-site BNG and there's off-site BNG. On-site, within the residential red line, developers want a complete exit strategy. Their aim is to get shot of all the land. They buy it, they build the houses, and they have no residual liability. So they want some method of transferring all of that land into a third-party ownership. Historically, 20, 30 years ago, probably now, the traditional model was the green infrastructure within the developments on the large part was transferred to a local planning authority who commuted some. That's becoming increasingly uncommon these days, and a really popular funding model, or common funding model, I should say. And it was actually identified in our research that this is going to be the most common funding model for on-site biodiversity net gain, is to fund it by a service charge. So transfer the land into a management company, and for the management costs of that habitat management over 30 years will be covered by a service charge applied to houses, and which residents pay annually. Ranges from £250 to £500 per year, and it will fund the habitat on site, the on site biodiversity net gain, but it also covers the wider green infrastructure. At least that's how it should work. I was watching a webinar the other day, and I won't mention which one, but they were asked about how will the on site biodiversity net gain be managed. And there was a lawyer and a house builder, and there was a suggestion that there should be a management company for the on-site biodiversity net gain and a management company for all the rest of the green infrastructure, because there is a concern in the industry that standard management companies who are very used to cutting grass 18 times a year shouldn't be left to create lowland meadow over 15, 20 years. So there's a suggestion that there should be two management companies, which actually would be a terrible news story for that house builder, and it would be a terrible outcome for the residents of those new homes, because it would mean that there's two landowners and therefore two service charge regimes. And that means two bills, two administration fees. So residents are paying double what they should have to. What you want on site is to have a management company that can take on everything. So there's not multiple management charges. There's not lots of bills going to residents and variable standards of service on site. There should be one management company that can take on everything. And that's what the Land Trust offers. It's a bit of a plug. I'm the head of environment and biodiversity, but I'm still on the business development team, so I've got to make some plugs here today. So you want a manco that can take on everything, fund it all by service charge. There is quite a damning reputation about management companies in some scenarios. There are some horror stories about how private mancos, for-profit mancos, will be taking on land, and then they're, quote, incredibly low at the early stages of the development. But then there's no cap on their service charges, and they charge what they want, and there's huge bills when something goes wrong on site. So there really needs to be some careful consideration. The traditional mancos aren't going to be the best solution for on-site biodiversity net gain. Resident mancos, so there's a structure whereby the ownership is transferred into a resident, ownership of the land is transferred to the resident manco. Residents, homeowners, basically have a share of that manco, so they're all directors. Is it fair that the liability of delivering biodiversity net gain is passed on to residents? If those residents who are directors of the Manco, if they fail to deliver the biodiversity net gain requirements, are they liable under planning? Are they going to have enforcement action taken against them? I don't see a council wanting to do that. So actually doesn't mean that BNG's on site is going to be unenforceable. Is it really going to be delivered? There's already a concern that on-site BNG, there's no on-site register. So if people want to monitor the on-site and make sure they're doing what they're doing, they have to rely upon the planning system and the planning portals and going through the hundreds of documents that's on a planning application to work out is the on-site BNG being managed effectively. So there's already quite a few concerns about on-site. I can't just say that all residential developers should transfer their on-site BNG and all green infrastructure to the Land Trust, because that's not what we're here about today. This is about passing lessons learned that we've got. So it needs more thinking about the on-site BNG. If there are going to be mancos, there should be some accreditation of those management companies. There needs to be some gatekeeping on management companies. There needs to be testing over covenant strength of management companies. And that's how the solutions for on-site, in my view, could be achieved. And one thing I want to say quickly before I move on to off-site, there is an agreement from DEFRA under the regulations that if a residential developer creates more than 10% gain on site, they are able to sell the percent of the units over that 10%. So if they're achieving 20%, supposedly the 10% worth of additional gain that they don't need to provide, whatever that equates to in the number of units, supposedly they are able to sell that under the rules and regulations of biodiversity net gain, which has got some negative press because basically it provides a ceiling. It means that now potentially only 10% will be achieved, and there's not it will stop people doing more than 10%, or it's a ceiling figure. But we do and are seeing that we do expect and we are seeing that house builders will want to sell their excess units if they put their on-site biodiversity net gain into a service charge. They won't be able to sell their units. At least that's the advice that we've got. House builders should take their own advice. That's probably a disclaimer that I need to put in there. But the money you get from selling your biodiversity units, if it's from land that's governed by a service charge regime, that income should, if done with best practice, only be used to offset the service charge bill. So house builders won't be able to make money from it. They'll just be offsetting a service charge bill for the residents. And anybody that's been involved in a scheme where residents haven't been charged service charge for 10 years, and then suddenly a service charge regime which they're obligated to pay is enforced and they're asked to pay that money, it's a bad news story. So it doesn't, if developers, house builders are looking to sell biodiversity units, they've got to look for a different model for on-site than service charge, because it's going to stop them being able to do that effectively. Looking at off-site, and there's two types of off-site for a developer. I mentioned it earlier. They can either acquire their own land and they control their own biodiversity units, their own off-site biodiversity net gain sites, or they can buy biodiversity units from a third party. Firstly, developers aren't used to acquiring land just for the purpose of creating and maintaining habitats. They don't want to maintain, they can't maintain the habitats in-house. They don't want to maintain the habitats in-house. So if they're looking to buy land to create their own biodiversity units or their own off-site BNG for developments within a region, they need a third-party body to own that. And we're having discussions with various house builders who are looking at the residual land, land that they had for a long time, and they acknowledge now actually the residential planning likelihood of getting residential planning is low. So they're looking at these alternative means of generating income and perhaps safeguarding these units for a particular council area. And they're coming to organisations like the Land Trust, the Wildlife Trust, asking them to quote for the management of 30 years. So a solution for them is they don't want to do it in-house, so they should partner with the right body to deliver the on-site, the off-site, sorry, the off-site management for 30 years. And that's quite straightforward because you get a management partner in, and they will take on that responsibility. Yeah, the developer will retain complete control over those biodiversity units and complete control over that management body through KPIs to make sure that they're delivering what they're supposed to. The big concern at the moment with offsite is the availability of biodiversity units. Is there going to be an offsite biodiversity unit market? I mentioned it earlier, the credibility of those units, the longevity of those bodies delivering units. There's no gatekeeping on those bodies that can own biodiversity net gain land and those bodies that can sell biodiversity units. So technically, anybody who's a landowner could sell biodiversity units. So there's a risk there in itself. There has been concerns that to begin with, there will be some dodgy biodiversity net gain units available on the market. And again, I've come back to my point before, where on-site BNG managers should be accredited. Likewise, Land Trust thinks that off-site biodiversity net gain managers, there should be some accreditation for them or some accreditation for their units. And the off-site register does achieve that in some way. There's such a thing as an off-site register, for those who don't know, where in order for your off-site to be considered off-site BNG, it's got to be registered on the Natural England Managed Register with a legal agreement that's on there to secure it, so you have some oversight of it. But there's a reliance on just the goodwill and the expectation that that body will deliver the biodiversity units and the habitats for 30 years. I'll do one more point that I want to make, because it's a really important point, and then I can stop on this particular question. But in order for off-site biodiversity net gain land to be legally secured, there's two legal me mechanisms for that. So Section 106, which is a traditional planning legal agreement, which everybody knows, it's been here since the Town and Country Planning Act 1990. And then, but through the Environment Act, there's a new legal mechanism that's being brought out. It's called a conservation covenant. So a conservation covenant, in my eyes, in simple terms, is provided as an alternative to not rely upon the Section 106 legal agreement. And underneath the conservation covenant, you have the landowner who's delivering the biodiversity units or the biodiversity manager. That's the really important, that's one party of it. The other party is what's known as a responsible body. A responsible body, in my eyes, again, simply is an organisation that's been approved by DEFRA to be a suitable alternative to the local planning authority to monitor and enforce off-site biodiversity net gain. So these two legal mechanisms, you've got Section 106 agreements, but the council's already stretched. Is it going to cause delays? Do the councils have the capacity in-house to monitor? You've got the responsible body who's meant to be the knight in shining armour to come save the day. As of now, only one responsible body has been approved by DEFRA. It was Natural England. They've declared a conflict, essentially, and they're not going to act as a responsible body. So mandatory net gain is live, but DEFRA have not approved any responsible bodies that are actually willing to act as a responsible body. So again, you're still at this moment in time relying on these Section 106 agreements. We've been through the concerns about capacity. So for me, my final part on this point is we need more responsible bodies. We need the DEFRA to carry on approving responsible bodies. In order for off-site BNG to be completely foolproof, well, not completely foolproof, but in order for off-site BNG to be able to be delivered effectively.
Excellent, thank you. There's a lot there for developers certainly to be thinking about. In the survey that you conducted, you asked respondents what they thought would be compromised as a result of the BNG regulations. And one of the interesting figures was 45% of the organisations surveyed thought that open green space for public access could be negatively impacted. Turning to you again, Alan, why do you think that is, and how can the LPAs make sure that that isn't the case?
I think the key thing within this is that it's been created quickly, and that to be the headquarters where being SCC were say that, you know, that nature is, you know, significantly diversity local communities, just about the understanding. And that's why we're out there banging the drum and doing things like this podcast, is to say, look, this is really important. This can make a difference. It can really protect and enhance property values, and therefore, you know, profits that people can make, but also enhance the environment and enhance people's understanding of the environment. So they're passionate about it and doing what they can then within their local community, their local garden, the local green space, not just in the space that's been delivered as part of the planning process. So I've kind of talked a little bit big in terms of the local planning authorities. It's about making sure that this is delivered and delivered in an appropriate way that doesn't exclude the public, but brings the public in so they are understanding it, that the public people are part of nature. They're part of the environment. You know, we live, we breathe, we are dependent on the oxygen that we take in. We're dependent on so many things, which is intrinsic within the space that we live in. So that's why it's so important. I'm aware time is short, so I won't go on for many more minutes on this particular point, but it's really, really important. Just because you are protecting and enhancing the environment and biodiversity does not mean to say you've got to exclude the public. There are ways it can be done that really gives so much benefit to all of the community, as well as the developers and clients.
Thank you. And then to wrap up my final question, Joe, how can the Land Trust help developers to deliver these BNG requirements?
Thanks, Lizzie. As I mentioned earlier, we've done the recent research over the last couple of years to try and work out the gaps in the market. What do we think is needed? And we've identified the gap that we've seen is a demand for an experienced, not-for-profit, national, transparent body with strong governance, sustainable, that's able to deliver on-site and off-site biodiversity net gain. And stemming from that, we've got six models for delivery of biodiversity net gain. I've touched on quite a lot of these today, but so the service charge model, on-site biodiversity net gain, we can fund that, own that and fund that via service charge. So that's an offer that we're already offering to the market. I think we've got close to 8,000 or 9,000 properties that we're already collecting service charge from. So this is just sort of bread and butter for the Land Trust, business as usual. There's going to be a market for demand rather for on-site biodiversity net gain, off-site biodiversity net gain to be acquired freehold. And we're able to do that via our endowment model. Again, this is all these models are national. Some developers, some land promoters do not want to part with the freehold. They are considering 30-year, well, the residual viability or the residual value of that site after 30 years. So they don't want to part with freehold. And there's other reasons why they don't want to, but we're looking at 30-year models. This could be suitable for on-site, but really this is tailored towards the off-site biodiversity net gain sites. So a 30-year model, we either take a 30-year lease or 30-year management agreement. We manage it. The funding agreement here is different. It would either be a committed sum paid up front, or depending on the covenant strength for the landowner, we could consider 30 annual payments in advance. But that's subject to due diligence, obviously, another disclaimer. We've already mentioned that we've sold some biodiversity units up from Barnsley. We're about to reserve some units with a superstore, supermarket store, sorry, in Wiltshire. So we are selling, reserving units across England. So that's another one. The concerns about longevity, credibility, everything here in terms of biodiversity units that we offer, they can fall away. We're a not-for-profit organisation, which is obviously clear by the name, but I don't think we've stated it yet. So we're a not-for-profit governed by a board of trustees, governed by a panel of independent members, governed by charity law. So there's a real strong safeguard and assurances behind the Land Trust. So the credibility of our biodiversity units and actually the longevity of our organisation as a whole is really high. Touching on units, again, I am in the business development team. We've got over 2,000 biodiversity units that we're looking to allocate, sell, trade, assign, whatever you want to call it, across England. So do get in touch if you want to discuss those. Quickly, again, not necessarily mandatory net gain, but we are seeing organisations wanting to be nature positive, and some organisations have their own internal KPIs for biodiversity. So we're looking at strategic partnerships that aren't governed by mandatory net gain, but where they want to do a large partnership with an organisation. We're already doing this in National Highways, and we're at the feasibility stages of partnering with them on about 250 hectares of land, and looking to fund over 500, between 500 and 800 biodiversity units worth of habitat creation and restoration on sites in Yorkshire and the North East. So that's a sort of a really large scale. We're not looking at one or two, three, four, 10 biodiversity units sold here or there. This is strategic partnerships where we're looking at 500 to 800 biodiversity units. And the last one, I've mentioned, I've had a bit of a run or a dig at DEFRA about responsible bodies. Land Trust's application is pending with DEFRA at the moment to become a responsible body. I've chased them once. They do caveat it takes 12 weeks and it's only been 4 weeks. So I'm probably being too eager. But in the absence of a responsible body, we need more approved. So the Land Trust is hoping, subject to application, to act as a responsible body. So we're not going to manage all on-site, off-site biodiversity net gain, but we do want to try and do as much as we can to make sure that biodiversity net gain is a massive success. So pending that application, a responsible body, and that's my sales pitch, which I've just been reading off a presentation that we did at a IEMA webinar the other day. But again, do get in touch. This is the last sales pitch. If you want to get in touch, please do. We're doing BNG across England. To all the listeners that are hopefully listening to this and enjoyed it. Hopefully it's not been too rambly or too monotonous on my part, but thanks very much.
Thank you both. Yeah, immensely informative. I'm sure lots of people ears will be pricking up having listened to this today. As we said at the beginning, it's all very new, came in to force the 12th of February for major developments, and I think for small sites coming in at the beginning of April. So it's very new. Lots of people will be grappling with this for the first time. So I'm sure we'll be back speaking to you again in a year, 6 months or whatever, with more kind of experience under your belt, hopefully. DEFRA have responded to your application by then, and we've got more stories to tell people. So no, it was really helpful. Thank you both.
Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan and Joe, for sharing your valuable insights with us today. And thank you also to our listeners for tuning in. If you would like to learn more or have any questions about the Land Trust, you can find Alan and Joe's contact information in the podcast description.